Today is Friday, and it's March 16th, year 2000, and welcome to spyman.ca, and welcome to our show Exposed. I'm Agent Ladybug, and we have this special briefing that I'm recording now with a very special guest. I'm very honored to have our very special guest, Eric Hufschmid, and Eric is a software developer, but what he's really done that's very important is he's written a book called Painful Questions, one of the first books that have ever come out on the 9/11 question, and he's got the inside scoop on Larry Silverstein. It's a major insurance scam. So welcome, Eric.
Oh, glad to be on your show.
Now, Eric, what do you know about this Larry Silverstein, the owner of the World Trade Center? He also owned the World Trade Center number 7. And what happened just prior to the 9/11 situation, he got a 99-year lease for the Twin Towers only for 5 weeks. This is my understanding before 9/11. What is this shocking news, and what do you think is going on here with Larry?
Well, it was about 6 weeks before the attack occurred. He got the 99-year lease. It was actually in the works before that, and people like the Governor Pataki were helping him to get it. It wasn't just him, you know. It wasn't just a coincidence. There was an actual attempt to get him, to give him control over that tower, because they had to have control over it in order to conduct this attack. Because as soon as he got control of the tower, there are reports of him changing security and maintenance personnel. So he started bringing some of his own people in. He didn't get rid of everybody, but he brought in some of his own people, you see.
So this is highly important then.
It is, because that is what gave him access to the buildings. You see, before that, they were government buildings. The two towers were built and controlled by the government. They were too expensive for an ordinary construction company, so the government had built them and it was in control. And Larry Silverstein had this building 7, which was 47 stories. It was a big building, but he was the landlord of building 7. And so when he got control of the towers, he had all three of them, and plus the rest of the complex, the little buildings and the shopping mall and all that. But so once he got control of it, he had access to do anything he wanted with those buildings. And he brought a friend in to help, Frank Lowy, a billionaire from Australia.
Yes.
He became the landlord of the underground shopping mall of the World Trade Center towers. So the two of these people, Larry Silverstein and Frank Lowy, became the landlords of the building. And Frank Lowy, you have to look at who Frank Lowy is, because, you see, before, if you go back to the 1940s, Frank Lowy was one of the Zionists fighting the Arabs to help get Israel established in the first place. See, these are not just ordinary people. Take a look at who they're friends with, who they work with, and you'll find there are hardcore Zionists involved with these people. And Larry Silverstein, people think of him as an American, but he was getting phone calls every week from Benjamin Netanyahu.
Oh,
now this
Benjamin, and he's in the picture right now in politics in Israel. That's highly important.
Well, you have to ask yourself how many landlords in America are getting personal phone calls. The news report said he would get them every Sunday. From Israel? From Benjamin Netanyahu? How many landlords get that? This is a very close friend. This is someone who works with these people. So we have he's got a relationship with Frank Lowy, this Zionist to help get Israel established. He's friends with top Israeli officials. They all, in fact, several of them called after the attack just to talk with Larry Silverstein. You know, the news reports make it sound like, oh, they're just asking how are you doing and how is New York. But think about it. How many landlords get phone calls by top Israeli officials? So this is the connection that people don't quite get. The connection that Silverstein has to the Zionist movement and the Israelis. You see, and he was good friends with Ariel Sharon.
Ariel Sharon as well?
Well, they were all calling him. I mean, he would talk to them on the phone. There, I don't know what you want to call that, a friendship or association or a working relationship, but you know, when you get people like Ariel Sharon calling you on the phone, you're not just an ordinary person. You know, you got to realize Ariel Sharon doesn't just call anybody up on the telephone and talk to just anybody. And neither does Benjamin Netanyahu, and neither do other Israeli officials. Larry Silverstein has contacts, and people are always saying with the World Trade Center. You know, one of the most confusing issues about this World Trade Center is somebody put explosives in those towers, and people are thinking, well, why would the U.S. attack itself? Why would the Americans put explosives in those buildings, destroy their own buildings, kill their own firemen, make their own citizens sick with all of that demolition debris? Why would the Americans do this? But if you look at the attack, you'll see there aren't that many Americans involved. What they really are is are Zionists and Israelis. And Larry Silverstein, because of his connection to Israel, could have been asking the Israelis to send people over to install these explosives, and they may have even manufactured the explosives. They may have shipped them over from Israel. The Israelis may have been the ones who put them in, and then they went back to Israel when it's all over, and this is why you can't figure out who did it. They're not here in America. You know, the Americans are looking around America, trying to figure out, well, who bought the explosives? I don't see any records of anyone buying them. And they're looking around, who in the military or who in the CIA put them in? They can't find anybody. But look at what happened before and after the attack. All the Israelis that were picked up on visa violations or because they were just suspicious, like those five that were celebrating the attack. Do you remember those?
Yes, talk about those five Israelis that were celebrating the attack.
Well, there were five in a van. They were in a van in New Jersey across the river watching the attack, filming it, and celebrating. And someone saw them, probably because they were supposed to be seen, because it later turned out that they had Arab clothing in their van when they got caught. What apparently they were doing is they were dressed as Arabs. They were making it look like they were Arabs who were celebrating the attack. The trouble is that after the report came in about these Middle Eastern men, these five Middle Eastern men celebrating, they made the mistake of driving into Manhattan. You know, like a lot of criminals will do, you know, they like to go back and, you know, look at the scene and laugh at it. And anyway, as they're driving in, they got picked up because there was this report, you know, five Middle Eastern men in a van celebrating the attack. And so the police saw this van with these five guys in it. And, oh, well, let's check them out. They check them out. They've got Arab clothing in the car. They've got traces of explosives in their van. They've got box cutters. And so they were then arrested, and they weren't as citizens. They were Israeli citizens. And so they were put in jail. And they sat there for quite a while before somebody within the federal government said, send them back to Israel. And so they went back to Israel quietly. Nobody ever really investigated. But then they went on an Israeli television talk show. Three of the five did. And in this television talk show, you can see it on the internet, or you can go to IamTheWitness.com and watch it. We have the video also at IamTheWitness.com. You'll see that three of them were talking to the Israeli talk show host on television, and one of them said they were there to document the event. As they're trying to explain what they were doing there, why they were filming it. And their response is they were there to document it. And now you have to ask yourself, if they were there to document it, who sent them? Who paid for it? This is a sign somebody in Israel knew it was coming. They knew when it was coming. They knew exactly what was going to happen. And they said, here, go over there and document it. And document it for what? People don't figure this out. What this is if you look through history, you'll see this attack on the World Trade Center is one of many type of attacks like this, what they call false flag attacks, where take a look at 1946. In Jerusalem, there was a bombing at the King David Hotel. Some Arabs installed explosives in the hotel and blew it up and killed a bunch of people. But the British, at the time, this was not Israel. It was still Palestine. And the British were still there. The British troops were there. And the British caught the people that did it and found out they were Israeli. Oh, well, they weren't Israelis yet. They were what you'd call Zionists or Jews, pretending to be Arabs. It was the same type of a thing, but on a smaller scale. They put explosives in a building, pretended to be Arabs, pretended to be attacking British and other people, trying to make the British angry at the Arabs. And this is what the 9/11 attack was. It was the same thing as that bombing of the King David Hotel, but on a larger scale. It was some Israelis blowing up the buildings, making it look as if Arabs had attacked us. And then immediately you'll see that all the Zionists in the media, immediately after that attack, were blaming Arabs and trying to get Americans stirred up into a frenzy that we must go attack Afghanistan and Iraq and, you know, the whole Arab nations, really. That's what this attack was. It was a trick to make the Americans and the rest of the world angry at the Arabs. Then, you know, it's like what people do with dogs. You know, they'll hit them in the face with a bloody rag, and after the dog gets all excited, they'll let the chain go and say, "Go get him! Go get him!" And that's what the Americans were being used as, attack dogs, to go attack Arabs. To kill as many Arabs and destroy their nation, to destroy Iraq. We're not there to help Iraq. If you look at what's going on in Iraq, there is no helping them. It's bombing them. It's destroying their water supplies, their electric power plants. There's no attempt to fix it. The contractors are also being killed in Iraq, which is another thing you have to ask yourself. Why would Iraqis be attacking the contractors who are trying to turn on the water and electricity for them? Look at how many of these contractors, when I say contractors, I don't mean mercenaries. I mean the contractors who are sent over there by private companies to turn on the water and the electricity and get the buildings back together. They are being killed, and supposedly by Iraqis. And it doesn't make any sense. Why would Iraqis kill those kind of people? What you'll see is all the evidence points to the entire Iraq war is a farce. The attack on 9/11 was to make Americans angry at Arabs. The Iraq war is to destroy Iraq. It's not to help Iraq. It's not to give them a better government. It's to destroy it. And that's why the contractors that go in there to fix it are being attacked. They're being attacked by Israelis who are pretending to be Arabs.
So this situation is very explosive. Now, what about this Zim shipping company? It broke its lease to move out of the World Trade Center just 1 week before the attack. And what's the link with this Michael Chertoff and Benjamin Chertoff? What goes with that story, Eric?
Well, the Zim moving company, I can't remember when they actually got out. There was one group of them in the World Trade Center towers, and they left their building. They abandoned the World Trade Center. I can't remember how long before the attack, but there was another building they had in New Jersey across the river. And now, exactly what these people are doing, they're claiming to be nothing more than a moving company. You know, they'll help people move furniture or whatever they need to move. But think about this. Here are Israelis working in a moving company. This is a perfect cover for them to be shipping things like explosives or packages. They could get into the World Trade Center buildings on the grounds that they're just bringing in some furniture. It's a perfect way to hide.
Set up.
Yeah, it's a perfect way to hide a group of people who are hauling equipment around. And not only can they take things into the World Trade Center without arousing suspicion, but they can take things out if they want to steal things. Because you got to remember that they know these buildings are going to be blown up. So why not, the night before, start stealing whatever they want? So they could get away with it because people will say, well, what's that big truck doing? Well, it's a moving company. They're just moving some equipment or furniture. So people wouldn't think it's suspicious. Plus, they get to use the freight elevators. They're not even using the ordinary elevators for the people. So they could do this without too many people noticing, and the security people wouldn't really think anything strange. Nobody would think anything strange. And so they may have been bringing things out of the Trade Center also in preparation. Plus, if you look at what was going on before the attack, there was reports of power outages in the World Trade Center. There were reports of drilling noises and it looks like what they were doing is they were preparing for the attack, installing explosives, perhaps drilling some of the concrete or whatever, just to prepare it all for the attack. And the best people to do it would be people like moving company people, people that looked like they were workers. They would be the least likely to arouse suspicion. And then 100 to 200 of these Israelis were picked up, not just because they were moving company, but I mean on visa violations. They were, some of them were art students, some were moving, working for these moving companies. But 100 to 200 of them, of these young men, picked up and sent back to Israel very quietly. None of them ever interrogated. And then this brings
interesting that they never ended up in Guantanamo Bay.
Well, this is where you bring in Michael Chertoff and some of the other people. The police had arrested a lot of these people, and the police would have conducted an investigation, but somebody above the police sent them all back home. And there aren't too many people that have control over the police. There aren't many people that can go into a police station and tell somebody, get that guy out of jail, send him back to Israel. It's the federal government that can do this. And look at the American government. We have people like Michael Chertoff, who was in the FBI for a while. Now he's Homeland Security Director. His mother was one of the first Mossad agents. And his family, these are hardcore Zionists again. You have... And he's just one of them. He's one of our top government officials, and you know, basically he's a Zionist. Where are his real loyalties? Are they for America or are they for Israel? And you see, because of his authority in the federal government, he can get people released from jail. He has authority over the police. This is how these Israelis can get away with these crimes and then get quietly sent back to America. And then he's got a relative, some type of a cousin. I'm not sure if it's a first cousin or what, but a cousin, Benjamin Chertoff. He is now working at Popular Mechanics magazine. And, you know, it was some time before he was working there, Popular Mechanics started getting rid of some of their senior editors, and they bring Benjamin Chertoff in and use Popular Mechanics as a way to discredit the 9/11 conspiracy theories. And so this is another part, that very important part, is their control over the media. They could not get away with a crime this big if the media was investigating. We have investigative reporters such as the 60 Minutes crew, Mike Wallace and the 60 Minutes crew. We have 2020 at ABC. There's all sorts of people calling themselves investigative reporters, but not one of them has bothered to investigate any of these people. They don't investigate Michael Chertoff, Larry Silverstein, the five dancing Israelis, none of them. And look at who they are. You've got Benjamin Chertoff in Popular Mechanics. Mike Wallace, that's not his real name. He's actually a Jew. And the whole 60 Minutes crew is basically either Zionists or one of their blackmailed or bribed puppets. All of the media is controlled by them. They're buying up the media. They're buying it up and getting rid of anybody who isn't either a Zionist or one of their puppets. And this is why the media doesn't report any of this. People are looking at the media and thinking, well, maybe they just don't know what's going on. They do know. They are part of it. The media executives are part of this criminal network. They are not innocent. They are not simply making mistakes. They are part of the network. They are the criminals. They are part of the people that need to be arrested. And people like Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes, the people that own these companies, Sam Newhouse, you know, all those names, Sumner Redstone, they are part of the network. And it's because of that that they've been getting away with this. They've got people fooled into thinking that these are honest people, that 60 Minutes is an honest, unbiased news reporting agency. These are propaganda groups. And they are the part of the criminal network, and we cannot solve any of these problems until we deal with those people. They all have to be removed. They all have to be arrested. We've got to completely clean our media out from these people. They're getting control of that, the media, the banking system, the military, the government. They've got both political parties, especially the Democrats. They dominate the Democrats and the so-called liberals. This is another trick they're using with people right now. They're trying to shift all the blame for 9/11 onto George Bush or the Vatican. And by blaming it on George Bush, what that allows them to do is say, well, here's the solution. We'll elect Nancy Pelosi or Hillary Clinton. And in reality, these people just follow orders from the same group of Zionists.
These puppet masters.
Yes, and if you look at Nancy Pelosi, one of the people that's responsible for helping her get elected is another congressman, Rahm Emanuel. This is another one, just like Benjamin Chertoff, his father and grandfather are hardcore Zionists that helped Israel get established. There is a news report that Rahm Emanuel's father was one of the people who helped assassinate. He was part of the team that assassinated the Swedish government official in Palestine and some other people. These are Zionist murderers. They are Zionist terrorists. They're getting into the American government. They're pretending to be liberals and Democrats. In reality, their goal is to develop Israel to take over America, take over Canada, take over Europe. They're not here to help us. And that's why you'll see the liberals, after they got elected, a whole bunch of Democrats got elected in this last election, and they're campaigning on how we're going to stop the war. We don't believe in the war, they're telling everybody. And the war is still going on. They're not doing anything to stop it. And you see, this is more evidence that the war was not to help Iraq in the first place. It's to destroy the place.
Now, very important is the money that Larry Silverstein got in this the insurance scam. He was trying to collect two times. Let's get into that. And also, who were these insurance companies were doling out the dough to Larry Silverstein? Eric, let's get into what his claim was first. He wanted to do two separate claims.
On the World Trade Center, he had it insured for terrorist attacks, and that would have given him about $3 billion, I think. So what he was trying to do with the insurance company is say, well, two planes hit the towers in two different attacks, so therefore it should count as two terrorist attacks, and he should get two payouts. This is what he was trying to use as reasoning. That since two airplanes hit, it should count as two attacks, and he should get twice what he, you know, what everyone else would think. So he was asking for something like $7 billion, practically, for just the towers. And on Building 7, he was trying to get about $800 million. I can't remember exactly what he's finally gotten, but I know he got about half of what he wanted for Building 7. And just recently, this shows you just how sad the American people are. He got about half of what he wanted on Building 7, and he recently held a rally, or somebody arranged it. He was there speaking in New York City, demanding that the insurance company give him the full amount that he's asking for Building 7, and he has fooled some of the construction workers into thinking that he does deserve this money because it will provide jobs, it will allow him to rebuild the building. And so he's got the construction workers cheering him on, saying, yes, give Larry Silverstein the money. You know, they're cheering him on, helping him demand money for this attack on the grounds that it will give people jobs. I mean, this is shocking. This guy should be arrested, and instead he's got construction workers cheering him, demanding that the insurance companies pay everything he's asking for.
Now, the rubble was quickly shipped from the World Trade Center. Who do you think was shipping this out? Maybe the Zim shipping company as well?
Well, I don't know.
Who organized this, and what's the connection with the mafia?
Well, the destruction of the rubble was occurring because the city officials and the state officials and the whole federal government was allowing it. This shows you just how extreme this was, the corruption within our own government, because what they were doing was against the law, and the police knew it was against the law. They all know it's against the law. Whenever there's a crime scene, the police know that they have to seal it off and hold the evidence for investigation. And so their destruction of this evidence, they knew it was illegal, and there was even an article in a Fire Engineering magazine that in which the editor was saying he looked through all the laws trying to find if there was any exception to this. And he said there is no exception. They cannot legally destroy this. They're violating the law. So they all knew it was against the law. It's a sign that everybody, the mayor of New York City, the governors, the federal officials, the police, they all knew what they were doing was illegal, and they let it happen anyway. What they were doing is shipping it out, selling it to places like North Korea and China, and the rubble that they couldn't really sell, the smaller dust particles and pieces of no real value, they were just burying, taking to a dump and burying. And it was all illegal. I don't know exactly who was doing the shipping, whether the Zim company was involved, but it was basically just a destruction of evidence. And
this is a scene of crime.
Well,
now blaming it on the Arabs, and this particular fellow that's in Guantanamo, of all the timing, comes out now taking the blame. This is a crock. Why now?
Well, even if it wasn't a scene of crime, even if it was just an accident in which fire caused the towers to come down, even if it's an accident, the Fire Engineering magazine editor said, any building over five stories that falls down must be saved for inspection to figure out why it fell so that the architects know what they did wrong. It's a law in America. If any building, he says, above a certain size, like five stories, were to accidentally fall down or have any sort of problems, it must be inspected. They must have a report on what happened. And so even if it was not a crime scene, the destruction of that evidence was illegal. You see, it was illegal no matter how you look at it, whether it was a crime scene or whether it was just an accident. They knew they could not destroy that evidence. So that was deliberate, and there's only one reason to explain it. They did not want anyone to see closely what those steel beams looked like or what the dust particles looked like or what the computers looked like. They didn't want anyone to look closely because it would have shown you that they did not just fall down. They were blown up with explosives.
But the dust particles, wouldn't they come up with explosive compound?
Yes.
They're rather interesting.
Well, there was, in fact.
Americans have any speck of dust from the rubble from this 9/11? This is highly shocking.
Well, there are some analysis of it, in fact. What you'll find is that there was a Professor Cahill of Davis University who... He asked somebody, he gave them some containers and told them, get some air samples. He didn't even bother with the dust. He just went, he does atmospheric analyses. So he got some containers of the air days after the attack. It was days later. He just said, get some air samples from the area of the World Trade Center. And he analyzed it and said, there are microscopic particles of metal floating around in the air. And he says there is no way particles this small of metal can be floating in the air unless there are some extreme temperatures to produce them. Because you don't get, when a building falls down, the metal inside the building doesn't just turn into these microscopic particles on its own. You know, something has to create this, explosives, extreme temperatures. And so his report does two things. First of all, proves that there is something going on there, such as explosives, thermite, something was there to create extreme temperatures, to create these tiny little particles. And second, his report explains why so many people in that area are sick to this day and dying. And there are reports of 8 to 10 to 20,000, sometimes 20,000 people who are being monitored for health problems. Because breathing these tiny particles, they're so small, they were getting into people's lungs and then into their bloodstream and causing kidney problems, lung problems, liver problems. Some have already died, others are just suffering. They cause also lots of skin rashes. And so his report has proven this, but you see, how many people even know about his report? The only way you'd even know about it is if you'd have to go. I think Christopher Bolin is about the only person who's written about it. And you're only going to find this at iamthewitness.com. That's the only site that I think is posting this. There might be one or two others out there, but most people don't know about it because the media is ignoring these reports, you see. This again brings you back to the media. The only way they can get away with this crime is by controlling the news reports, preventing all of the investigative reporters from investigating.
Tell our listeners also your website, because you could get on your website and get a lot of the information as well. Tell our listeners what your site is.
The easiest of my sites to remember is just hugequestions.com, H-U-G-E, and then questions.com. And that'll give you, that's just one page where you can watch some videos, and it'll take you to other sites. But that's my site. And another thing you'll notice is almost all of these so-called 9/11 investigators, anti-war activists, the peace groups, they're all ignoring both my site, they're ignoring Christopher Bolin, they're ignoring the IamTheWitness.com site. This is another clue into who's doing this and what's going on and how extreme the control is of even the 9/11 groups. The 9/11 groups, people think, oh, they're trying to expose 9/11, they're trying to help us. And the anti-war groups, people think, oh, they're trying to help us stop the war. But in reality, none of them are trying to help. What they're trying to do is control. They're trying to manipulate. They're trying to make sure nobody does anything. And they're also identifying who is aware of what's going on, you see. Look at the anti-war groups. They're a really good example. They want to stop the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. But the reason for the war is 9/11. So you'd think the first thing they'd want to do is show people that 9/11 was a setup by Israel to get the war going, wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Well, they have no interest in exposing 9/11. If you ask the people in control of these anti-war groups or these peace groups, why don't you expose 9/11? They'll say, well, that's irrelevant. It's not our issue. We don't want to get into that. We want to stop the war. We don't want to expose 9/11. Well, 9/11 is the reason for the war. If you expose 9/11, that takes away the entire purpose of the war. You see, for a person who believes that the Arabs attacked us, the war makes sense to them because they feel that they're being attacked by Arabs. So in order to stop the war, you've got to explain to the people, the Arabs didn't attack us in the first place. But they won't do it. And if you look at who's in control of these groups, you'll find Jews all over the place again. Israelis, Jews, I mean, people can't even put this together. The Jews are all over the media. They're all over the 9/11 groups. They're all
Zionists,
over.
Zionists, you mean?
Well, yeah, the Zionist Jews, and then they have some Christian Zionists too. You'll get them too. What they are is, what they have in common is this support of Israel. But an enormous number of them are Jews. You'll see that they don't always show their support of Israel. You won't see them always as supporters of Israel. You'll see them as just American Jews. And sometimes you'll see them as posing as Christians or atheists, or in some cases some of them claim to have converted to Muslims. But it's an amazing number of them in the media, in 9/11, in the anti-war groups, the peace groups.
Well, I'm rather surprised where they get the funding from, and when I notice that, it's very sophisticated, the funding for these anti-war groups, and you're absolutely right. It's probably coming from the same crowd.
Well, they have a phenomenal amount of money. You see, if you look at the banking system, the Rothschilds, and they're supposedly having more money than any other group on the planet. You have the Oppenheimers, the Bronfmans. There are some extremely wealthy families out there, all supporters of this Israeli this fantasy of recreating Israel and this fantasy of, you know, helping the Jews take over Europe and America. You know, there's a lot of them out there with money, and the liberals. This is another thing about these so-called liberals and Democrats. There's the Simon family. They're billionaires. They claim to be Democrats. There's a lot of these people that are Zionist Jews with an enormous amount of money posing as Democrats and liberals. A lot of them made their money through crime and a lot of them, they help each other. A lot of them are in gambling, real
Murder
estate.
Murder, Inc. Murder, Inc., Meyer Lansky, and on and on.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's enormous, the connections between them all are just incredible. It's a big, big network. This Zionist network is gigantic. And you see, they're part of their reason they're so big is Israel is a base of operations for them now. Now that Israel is established, they can train people there, they can make plans. They don't have to worry about the police over there. They are the police, they are the military, they don't have to worry about anybody arresting them for their crimes. And so they're supposedly now like the biggest ecstasy producer, of the drug ecstasy. They're running a lot of internet gambling operations over there. They're running a lot of pornography and sex slaves. They're getting away with a lot of crime now. And that also brings them money. And that, in conjunction with their banking empire and their control over the media, I mean, they have a lot of money and they have a lot of control. And they're trying to dominate the internet also by putting out thousands and thousands of websites, of anti-war websites or 9/11 websites. And they're forming group after group after group. So that if you go on the internet to look for 9/11 information, chances are very good that you'll run into one of their sites rather than my site or Bolin's site. And so chances are good that you're going to get their propaganda.
Exactly. I noticed that Christopher Bolin and yourself probably have just the true nature of what happened in 9/11, and very few have it all. So as soon as I saw that Larry Silverstein, it's an insurance scam. These people don't care if they kill 3,000 or 3 million.
Well, yeah, the group was large. Apparently, some people did actually care. See, the killings, this is one of the other reasons why you realize this was not done by Arabs. 3,000 is actually a very small number when you consider what it could have been. If this had been a real attack by Arabs, those buildings would have been full of people. And if the buildings really did fall down from fire, I mean, there could have been tens of thousands of deaths. And at the Pentagon, too, where the plane hit the Pentagon, it hit the empty section. Hardly anybody died. So it was actually a small number of deaths, but you're right. A lot of these people really didn't care, but some people within the group apparently decided to be nice and let almost everybody live. That's why the towers, if you look at when the towers actually collapsed, it was after almost everybody got out of there, except for the people who were trapped above the fire zone and couldn't get out, you see.
So maybe that was not expected. Maybe that's the whole thing as well. But if it was in its full capacity, how many people do you think were notified beforehand to not show up that day?
Apparently a lot of people. In fact, just recently, Christopher Bolin was talking to one of the people who survived. He got out, Stanley Primnath. I forget how to pronounce that name. He worked in the Fuji Bank in the 81st floor, which is where the plane hit. And he was sitting in his office when the plane hit. And it came right on the same floor. Part of the plane went right on the floor that he was on. But he did manage to survive. And he made the remark that almost nobody showed up for work that morning. He was there with about 20 other people. And he said normally on his own floor, just that one floor alone, there's over 100. I think he said 120. The article is at IamTheWitness.com if someone wants to see it. But almost nobody at the Fuji Bank showed up. And there's reports of other people not showing up. There's reports out of the Middle East that the Israelis that worked in the building didn't show up. They got instant messages, don't bother coming to work today. So apparently a lot of people knew, don't go into work that day. If the Arabs attacked us, how would Japanese bank officials know about it? It's all a sign that this is a bigger crime than you realize. And why would the Fuji bank officials have been notified?
All of these things are coming out.
Yeah, and it's interesting that it's a bank, too. A bank. You remember, I mentioned the Rothschilds and their banking empire. What is the Fuji Bank? What's the connection? We're not sure. No one can quite figure this out. But you see, Japan also has a problem with organized crime. And the banking system, maybe there's something going on with the Japanese organized crime gangs. And maybe they're working in some respects with the Zionist crime gangs. You see, it's possible that some of these gangs work together. Because you mentioned Meyer Lansky. You'll see if you look at him, he sometimes worked with some Italian gangsters. And it's possible that this same Zionist gang today is working with some of the Japanese gangsters. And that may have been
interwoven somehow.
Well, that they might work together sometimes, even though they don't. They may not be one big happy family, but they may work together sometimes on some crimes. You'll see that with Meyer Lansky. He would sometimes work with some of the Italians. They weren't necessarily friends, but, you know, they might occasionally work together to help each other. And that might have been what was going on 9/11. And this would explain why Japan doesn't do anything. You know, why is Japan so quiet about 9/11? Why is Canada so quiet? Why is Europe quiet? Why is no nation anywhere talking? And you'll see that Japan even said right after the attack, they were going to investigate the stock market transactions. Do you remember hearing about this?
Exactly. Let's get into that issue, the short selling of the put options and the American Airlines and United Airlines. Where's all the evidence now being suppressed, and why hasn't the Securities Exchange Commission in Washington dealt with who the people were that made the money on these put options? Let's get into that, Eric.
Well, a couple of days before the attack, there were some very mysterious put options, you know, people gambling on certain stocks dropping in price, United Airlines and Morgan Stanley or whatever that company, that investment company that's in the World Trade Center. There's a couple of very unusual transactions and on a large scale, which is a sign that somebody knew something was going to happen. And then after the attack, these people made a lot of money. So then you realize, well, they had knowledge of this attack coming. This explains it. And so immediately after the attack, the Securities and Exchange Commission in America said they're going to investigate. And so did the same transactions were going on in Europe and Japan. And Europe and Japan both said they were going to investigate also. And yet every one of these transactions, all of their investigations were stopped. There has never been an investigation. Every one of them has been blocked. And, you know, the people who blame this 9/11 attack on George Bush or the Vatican have to explain, how did George Bush or the Vatican stop the Japanese from investigating? How did they stop all the European countries from investigating? How did they stop America? This is not being stopped by the Vatican or George Bush. George Bush doesn't have control over Japan. And who does? It's the only way you can explain Japan is it's that Japanese gang, and they're working with the Zionist gang. There's no other way. How do you explain this? There's corruption in Japan, and somehow their corrupt officials are being influenced by the same Zionist gang that's controlling America and Europe. And they have so much control over the world that they can block investigations all over the place. And they control the media everywhere also. They're controlling it to some extent in Japan. They don't have as much control over the Japanese media, but they do have control over the Japanese media. In fact, a Japanese film crew put a television show, they made a television show to expose 9/11. I think it was 2004, I forget. They sent a crew through America, and I think a little of Canada, to interview some of us. And I was the last person on their trip, and they interviewed me about some of the attack, and they went back home, you know, gave the video to the studio, and then when it went on TV, my face had been blocked out, my information had been blocked out, they wouldn't let anybody know about my book or video. Somebody in the crew, they couldn't completely suppress this show, but what they did was they blocked out my name and face and made it impossible to identify who I was. So they have some control over the Japanese media, but it's not as complete as it is over America, Canada, and Europe.
This is absolutely shocking. So you were interviewed, and here it is. They're able to erase you out in one fell swoop.
Well, yeah,
this
my face.
Shocking.
They blocked my face, my name. They wouldn't show my book or anything. So I was just a nameless, faceless person, just, you know, making a few remarks. They couldn't completely get me out.